Welcome to Crippled System, episode 233 of our podcast. This is our audio only because of WrestleMania. My name is Andy, and I play Kator, and I played some Guild Ball, and I'm going to be doing some God Tier.
My name is Nathan, and I play Reveal, Morhan Voorhees, Sakara Quax.
Those were syllables, but I'm not sure they were words.
I play a reveal themed deck with Morhan Voorhees as my leader.
Okay, I got the reveal. I got the reveal. It was after that.
Do not engage.
Morhan Voorhees is my leader. Yes, haha. Jason Voorhees' brother. It's spelled different. And Ahara Quax is because I'm mean.
Jason Voorhees' moron brother. That's what I'm getting out
He's
of this.
He's got horcruxes.
Yes. Yes, he has the horcruxes. So Jason Voorhees' moron brother is revealing the horcruxes.
Okay, that makes more sense than what I got the first time.
You're right. Welcome.
Moldyvort. That's
Moldyvort?
Yeah, Moldyvort.
Fair enough.
Yeah. True enemy of Perry Hotter.
And I'm Dave, and I play Kador and maybe Signar and maybe Crix and maybe Protectorate. Probably Protectorate when the CID comes
Wait
through.
Wait a second. You're jumping onto the Signar train? Everyone's jumping off the Signar train.
I've been on I was on the Signar train for a while, and then I realized that when I was getting the stuff when the Trencher CID came through and the models came out, that there were three of us that night at the shop that had all had their shiny boxes of Trencher Long Gunners. And I thought to myself, you know, it's going to be boring if everybody plays Signar. Mm-hmm. But now everybody's off that train, so I'm going to hop back on it for a little while.
Okay.
Because I just don't. I mean, that's my thing. The lists I play are ridiculous bullshit. I mean, that's if I say, hey, I want to play this, you should look at that and say that should go into CID because it's overpowered. Because that's just I'm a horsefly. I'm drawn to bullshit.
You don't want your opponents to have fun. That's not your job to make sure they have fun.
Yeah,
but it gets boring when everybody's playing the same type of bullshit. So I stopped with Signar for a while.
Signar's garbage because Nemo 3 can't electric leap Rask to death.
He can still electrically press to death.
Nope, it's garbage. It's dead. Complete bullshit. How dare they?
You don't have to play him in fucking Storm of Vision. You can play him in any of the other forces with almost the same amount of lightning shit with shit that's not immune to lightning.
Actually, guy. All right, if you're listening, keep this under your hat because I'm going to have some secret tech here that I'm going to let you know because everybody on all the forums are talking about what they can think they can play now that people aren't going to play Nemo 3 because he's nerfed. So I'm going to play Nemo 3 just to drop into the now I can play this because I'm not going to see Nemo 3 and play Nemo 3 anyway so people won't be expecting him.
But you'll have to be 3 inches further forward with a jack that isn't electrical immune.
Oh no.
I'll be okay.
Yeah,
it's so bad.
I think I was probably like one of the first people to spot that on the CID and so I immediately posted that to the Signar forums and holy fuck, has that been a salt mine of amazement. I mean, I think last time I checked, it was at least a 350 comments. into that post.
And guess what? Good change is good.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, though, it's not official yet. I mean, that's basically part of an upcoming errata.
Yeah, it is not live, but it is 100% locked in stone will be the rule.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that was fantastic because, I mean, when the juniors came out, when Canelit came out, the first thing I did when I read his rules were...
Snipe Nemo 3.
Yeah, this wouldn't have been proposed if they didn't already have a plan for a Nemo 3 nerf.
Yeah.
And then 2 days later, yep, Nemo 3 nerf.
Well, because they're like, because people were probably feedbacking Sniped Nemo 3, and they're like, yeah, don't bother. We don't need to hear about that shit.
Yeah. No, that was because I had thought for a while. It's like, you know, I bet in the next dynamic update, they're going to do something about Nemo 3 because everyone hates him. And I mean, half the people that play him hate him. So, I mean, Nathan, with your self-loathing gaming style, you should probably take him up because because of the number of people that play Nemo 3 hate him.
Well, I mean,
Jake hates him.
For all the reasons that they posted in the original CID thread is that they didn't really want people to be able to just... with like no consequence, just shoot their own model to shoot some other high defensive thing down.
No.
I mean, sure, you might put a jack up there now that's not electrical immune, and you might spike some damage here and there on them.
It's a great change. I would like to see I would like to see some change to it that can allow some change to the rules that will allow Eleeps to actually be either to be attacks and preferably ranged attacks too because of There's still a lack of interaction in the rules that I think is still problematic. Correct. But
it's not an attack yet.
I mean, the changes that are in this that were in this announcement are really good.
I don't know that they need to be an attack, though. There's plenty of things that aren't attacks that function very similarly. Whatever. I mean, I won't die on that hill, but...
I don't know. I mean, I also spend a lot of time with playing Harkovich with Kodiaks, and Kodiaks have another ability that's not an attack, and there's just so much stuff that it is completely uninteractive with, and I think that's a problem. I mean, I've had lots of experience with the not an attack stuff on both sides of the table. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. I think it should be fixed. But honestly, with some of the changes to Nemo 3, who was the worst perpetrator of it, it won't be that bad now.
Yeah, it's a little more nichey, and I don't mind weird little interactions when they're uncommon and therefore interesting.
Yeah.
You know, when every other model had something that bypasses attacks, then what's the purpose of a definition of attack? But when each faction has one or two, like, oh, you got Kodiaks, and these guys have direct current, and these guys have, you know, it's sure, yeah, whatever. It's a neat little thing. Oh, look, you don't get a soul from that because it wasn't technically an attack. Oh, that's kind of neat. Oh, well, life goes on. It's when it's too common that it becomes just stupidly prevalent that I would be on the same boat with you.
Yeah. And I will also say that that even though I say this is a problem, I'm a terrible hypocrite about some of those things because I enjoy the hell out of using it, especially the games I've gotten into Grimkin, because I don't really enjoy playing into Grimkin. And just I'm going to trigger this Arcana. It's like, nope, that wasn't an attack. Aww.
Yep.
It was beautiful.
And that's I think that's kind of why Privateer is maybe trying to relegate that a little bit too, because when you have something that you're ready to trigger, you're happy the thing's going, it's kind of a negative play experience.
Yeah.
You know, when you can't trigger the one things that your army does, it's, you know, like, oh, this is kind of bull.
Well, I mean, that's the problem. I mean, I've seen people before say that part of the reason for this is that War Machine does not have a concept of owners of sources, just owners of attacks. I mean, that's like in Magic the Gathering, they have rule concepts of who owns an effect, and War Machine doesn't really have that. They just have attacks and whether an attack is a friendly or an enemy attack. And so you have a lot of things like stuff that triggers stuff, whether it be battle-driven, whether it be soul collection, that only operates on enemy attacks. Mm-hmm. And the intent of that and the important abuse that it's trying to stop is that it say, no, you can't kill your own shit to cause this to trigger. I can't punch one of my own Vengers to battle to cause the whole unit to be battle-driven. Mm-hmm. It just gets to be a problem when, oh, by the way, these things that I'm going out and using them to kill you aren't attacks because of other issues, and also that they fall under this category of protecting you from abusing your own shit, but I'm going to stop it as well.
I picked up one of your warjacks and hurled it at your model and hit him in the face. That doesn't trigger battle driven.
Yeah.
Because the secondary throw target is not an attack.
Yep.
You know, and yes, I understand. I just personally don't mind it as much when it's niche little clever interactions versus a more common loophole.
I mean, there are only a couple of places where it's really abusive. I mean, Nemo 3 is one of them. Harkovich is one of them, although I may be the only person playing Harkovich anymore. And also, I'm one of the few people that plays them with four Kodiaks, which is the situation that I abuse the hell out of Vent Steam not being an attack. So there are only a couple of places where it shows up. So maybe it's just Eleeps. Maybe it's not necessarily the rules for sources, but Vent Steam and Eleeps could use a look at.
Well, the Crevasse, I don't believe, is an attack either.
I believe so.
It's... No, the Crevasse was weird in that, like, it wasn't. It's not a spell, but it is a magic attack. Correct. Because the original ones, like, that was the weird thing with Crevasse.
And that was the other thing, though, too, is, like you can actually hit, I believe... Correct. Severius with
and Doom Reavers and all of those things.
Yep. With Crevasse and also, I believe, with Primal Shock.
Yes, Primal Shock. I use Primal Shock to kill Doom Reavers all the time. Because the target of the spell is the primary target, and then the either Primal Shock or the secondary spray, those are magical attacks, but they are not spells.
Yeah. Correct. Yep.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, they're weird, but I think it's cool primal shocking Severius. I think it's cool crevassing Doom Reavers. It's Yeah, it's neat to me.
It's Severus sitting up on his pedestal going, like, nothing could touch.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there are also other cases like that that I'm not a fan of. And one of those is like I played John Damaris in an ATC game, playing my ridiculous Zirkova 2 list into his testament with anti-spell mini feats on everything, and got through it, completely ignored the anti-spell mini feats by aiming all of my sprays at the racks in his far backfield.
Yep.
And that just feels bad. It feels wrong. And I clocked myself, and that was some sort of strange penance for it. But
yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's a fine line between clever play and abuse.
Yeah.
And two people are never necessarily going to agree 100% on when it's one and when it's the other.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, 100%. I just the more I play with some of these borderline abilities, the more I tend to think they're on the abuse side of it.
But. Sure. What are you doing, Andy?
Sorry, I was telling my roommate that we're not broadcasting, because turns out that when we broadcast, sometimes the streaming devices at our place end up fucking up.
Oh, but it's WrestleMania. I don't want that to happen.
Yeah. So I just heard his door open. So you may have just been getting food. Happen?
What?
You don't want WrestleMania to happen?
I don't want WrestleMania to get it. I don't want the broadcast screwing up to happen because it's WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had to miss Thug Rose defending her championship.
Yeah, it was a decent fight. It was definitely, so UFC happened last night, and the UFC, which has been plagued by horrible Conor McGregor, which happened on
sometimes
Thursday.
Sometimes you flip out and like start throwing chairs at a bus depot. It happens to the best of us.
They just broke into the place. They didn't break in. They were let in by some other people that weren't supposed to let them in.
Sure.
And it was like 20-some people just decided to raid the UFC pre-fight over at the thing. Then he threw like a chair through a windshield, yeah. And then he threw like a trolley a loader trolley through a window.
Yep.
Did cut up a couple fighters.
Did somebody tell Conor McGregor that he works for the UFC and not for the WWE?
No, but Conor McGregor knows he's basically too rich to care, in a yep. sense. And that's the hard part. And UFC needs so much more money that they can't really do much about it, because if they let him go, he is a moneymaker wherever he goes. He will go to Bellator and make right. them a ton of money. So,
and he's rich enough that even if they like fine him, he's just like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, off of his last fight, I mean, I think his purse off of the Merriweather, Floyd Merriweather fight, I think his purse was $30 million.
Sure.
Not including other special deals on the side that he got. So, I mean,
like Floyd's, take a dive.
Yeah. Well, it was 12 rounds a dive. I don't know if that's really a dive. I mean, he fought well. I mean, he didn't fight like...
He didn't
win.
Uh-huh. Yeah. See? The Amish Mafia paid him not to win.
Hey, Big Show lost to Floyd Mayweather.
It's a Big Show!
Yeah, he lost him at WrestleMania a couple of years ago. That pay-per-view last night was very slow. Every single one of the fights besides one went to time.
Yeah, the one was over in like 30 seconds, and then the rest of them all went.
Oh, what the prelim fights. Yeah. The actual fights for the pay-per-view itself.
Yeah. I was talking about the Canadian gangsta.
Oh, yeah. some of the pre-fights there were decent, but the main card was really slow. Joe Lozon ended up after the second round, he was beat up so bad. But finally get to the topic you were talking about Rose, is... what?
It's dimmed.
Yeah, it's energy dimmed. Saver.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, you have to jiggle the mouse, because if the screensaver kicks in, we all get delayed a turn.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. No, it's fine. Now it's gone.
That's a Space Alert reference. Anyway,
so
Thug Rose...
Her fight with Joanna was actually really well done. She easily won the first two rounds, and by everybody in the house, we thought that Joanna won the next two rounds, and then Rose basically won the fifth round. The judges scored it 49-46.
Huh.
all the way through. So for all four rows, like won 4 out of the 5 rounds.
Yeah,
which that's not it was really lopsided.
Sure, but you know, even if that was inaccurate, still giving her the what she should have, quote unquote, three out of five. It's still, you know, yeah, it's not like the wrong person won the match.
Correct.
It's
correct.
Just that the scoring wasn't necessarily accurate.
The scoring was really lopsided for that.
It's kind of like the prelim match that I was there for before I had to leave, where it should have been like one of the judges called it for the loser.
Yeah.
And we were all like, were you like, no? Like, this should have been unanimous, but that's fine because the person who was wrong was in this minority.
Yep. I mean, that's why they have it. They stress it all the time on the UFC Ultimate Fighter show is like, you know, don't leave it in the judges because they will fuck you. Cause they're not, you know, you might be throwing great punches in that, but they might not see everything.
Yeah.
And that sucks. Sucks for those folks. They get fucked over by judges. Otherwise I didn't get out of Jordan's place last night until about 12:30. So I'm not looking forward to another 6 hours worth of WrestleMania.
Well, you don't have to watch it.
I do have to watch it.
No, forget it.
And also NXT was last night. And once we're done with this, like, little recording of the podcast, I need to get you to watch the first match of the NXT pay-per-view that was on last night.
Okay.
I said only one match, so...
Okay.
You can watch this one match. Dave, you should watch this one match because it's awesome. There's a guy in there that looks just like us that's fighting on there.
What is NXT?
NXT is WWE's kind of like feeder fed.
Okay.
It's the AAA baseball for WWE.
But generally, since they don't really go on storyline as much, they don't heavily rely on storyline, so there's a lot more wrestling involved. So if you like watching the athletics, it is really fun to watch. Like, Nathan and I went to... live show that was in Milwaukee.
And there was a bear hug extravaganza.
Yes, there was.
One of the tag teams, they just were bear hugging their opponents for like the whole match, and the audience was going ape shit for it.
Heavy Machinery was not at the pay-per-view, though, yesterday. You know. But Killian Dane was there, which, he's a Viking, basically, yeah, sure. Pretty much. Fat, hairy Viking.
Volstagg.
Yep. So other than the wonderful errata that's coming soon, know when that's actually going to hit yet.
Nobody share my secret tech into the errata.
To play the nerfed model because it wasn't nerfed that much.
Yeah, because everybody seems to be celebrating that now they can play all of these lists because there's no Nemo 3. So I'm going to play Nemo 3 and be ha ha ha.
I mean, he's still going to be able to do what he does. I mean, in Storm Division, it'll be harder for him to get like the assassination kills like he does.
Yeah.
But if you play him in any of the other,
probably going to play him in Heavy Metal.
It was cool. My Conflux. Yeah, baby. So on my Prime Conflux, I can. One of the tricks I do is spit out the servitors, and in the Theme Force, they're all shield guards. Mm-hmm. Because the Conflux and servitors are electricity immune, they'll just ground all those leaps.
Yeah.
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 Yep. Shoot my caster, I just shield guard it to a Conflux servitor, and then it just goes nowhere.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
No, that's actually pretty cool. Or keep them around things that he can bounce things off of.
Yeah. You shoot that dude and you go, like, no, it's on this guy instead.
Yeah.
Same thing, similar. So you can make a list with Conflux the modulators and under Lucant so that they all count as shield guards. And so you'll have like 50 shield guards, all of which just ground any e-leaps.
I'm going to proactively suggest that the shifting stones get electrical immune as well.
Yeah. Okay. No,
I don't understand why they're not electrical immune. They're literally stuck in the ground.
Well, I don't understand why the Sentry Stones get to generate additional souls when they're not at cap. Or I'm sorry, Fury when they're not at cap.
Yeah.
But when they're not empty either, like they can be in the middle. Yeah. Meanwhile, my Sacral Vaults have to be completely naked before they get free souls.
Correct.
Bullshit.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's Sentry like the waiter.
Don't get something for having one Fury on them.
Yeah. Nathan, the soul waiter.
They don't have a passive effect for it. I think that's the justification.
So the soul waiter is coming by and is like, hey, do you want some more? Oh, I see you have some. So, and then he just walks away.
Yeah. Yeah, and then or the barbecue chicken guy comes chicken back guy next. Comes yeah. Back?
Yeah.
I wanted souls. tie breaks.
Yeah. Yes, I posted an opinion on some group, and apparently a lot of people have strong opinions about my opinion. So, no, what I was saying was I don't like breaking tie on an event. The idea is that...
Breaking Tide Pods?
Breaking what? Tie. Breaking, yeah, Tide Pods. Those are bad. Breaking those are bad, too. Yeah.
I like Breaking Away.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
Breaking Away, it's a bicycle movie.
Oh, no. Yeah,
it's good stuff.
I'm not very familiar with the genre of bicycle movies.
There's that, and there's American Flyers. Those are both very, very...
American Farters?
What? No, American Flyers is about, like, two brothers. And Breaking Away is about, like he dreams of being in the Tour de France, whatever. He comes from a poor town. Mm-hmm. The main character's dad is, like, a used car salesman, and he's the greatest character. He's wonderful. Anyway, yeah, anyway. Breaking Away. Breaking yeah. Bad. Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad Away?
Electric Boogaloo?
Yeah.
Well, that's Breaking 2. I mean... And that's a gem.
So is there a Breaking 2 and a Breaking 2?
No, there's Breaking.
Yeah.
And Breaking 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Was it Breaking or Breaking?
Breaking.
Bracken.
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 Brack. The Brack Show.
Yes.
Hey, everybody! Three hams will surely kill him. I hope that got the Three Ham song stuck in somebody's head, except for me. So somebody else's head. I hope there are two people that have the Three Ham song stuck in their head now. Anyway, Breaking Ties.
Breaking Ties.
Electric Boogal Eyes. Yes.
Bug Eyes. What?
So this was just kind of come up because somebody was posting stuff on one of the Facebook forums, and we had an event here in Madison yesterday that had a tie for number one. I don't like Breaking Ties for number one. I mean, this is just the.
Well, I don't think anybody likes Breaking Ties for number one.
Yeah.
So that's the obviously you want your event to go till you have one undefeated, right?
Yeah.
So
I mean, sometimes I mean, just logistically, that's not going to happen.
Sure, and that can be the case, but far more often the point is going to be and the Breaking Ties for second through everything else, and that's where you get more into your point.
Yeah. So this is my proposal for an event. Don't have numerical places. Just have it set up so that if you go undefeated, you get gold. If you lose one game and exactly one game, you get silver. And that's all you need. Because, I mean, you have this thing. I mean, well, part of the response why I was posting on this and then other people had strong opinions on it was somebody posted a meme to the Reddit group talking about, oh, I'm sorry about your strength of schedule, but I'm going to drop after losing to you in the first round. And then the next pain was if you do that, they will find your body.
They will never find your body.
They will never find your body, sorry.
They will find your body. Yeah. Oh, and,
I mean, eventually.
Yeah, and I mean,
And, excuse me.
Was that the Battlestar Galactica theme?
It is apparently Full Metal Panic. I was scrolling and came across a commercial for Crunchyroll.
Oh,
okay. You have sound on the Facebook videos.
Yeah, it's because you did that once, and now Facebook will remember it. You can make it so there is no sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, that button right there.
Yeah. Now we're gonna get copyright strike. From random anime from Japan on Crunchyroll. They're not even a sponsor. We don't even have sponsors.
Brought to you by Crunchyroll. We have Patreon. We have patrons.
We do have... Well,
what are they?
We have sponsors. They are sponsors, yes.
Well, you just said we didn't have sponsors.
Oh, like I don't know how to say it. We don't have corporate sponsors. Yes. I should talk to Jay.
Yes.
Anyway, you were saying.
I was saying that. I mean, I
just made it bigger, louder.
I was trying to make it stop. There, it stopped.
No, that just means that when you see another video on your Facebook wall, it's. What about tie
worry about that
tie one. Yeah. So as I said, that I think it's terrible if you have two people that go undefeated in an event. And you have the need to say one of them got first and one of them got second. No, you didn't play enough games to decide who got first and who got second. So you give them both a gold medal and you get over it. And I think this is my proposal, is that you do the same thing for the next tier, is that if you lost one game, you should get a silver, and that's it. Because there you have, if you have multiple people in that situation, you have not played enough games to really definitively come up with a ranking. And all of the ranking mechanisms we've come up with, and everybody seems to, or I shouldn't say everybody, but the most common one at events is strength of schedule. Mm-hmm. And strength of schedule is kind of arbitrary, and it creates that situation that you get pissed off at other players if they drop after you beat them, because it hoses your strength of schedule. And the worst part about this is that, yeah, it sucks when this happens, but at the same time, you shouldn't be in a situation where you have a reason to be angry at somebody else for saying, nah, fuck it, I'm going to go get a drink.
Yeah.
So I don't like strength of schedule. The other tie breaks I don't think are really any better, though, because yeah, you do it by control points, and then in a lot of ways you're basically sorting by how easy their first round was, because it's really easy to get into a position where if a guy comes in, one of the top players comes in and plays one of the weaker players, that then they can promptly go in and automatically win by five. Whereas mm-hmm. If they're playing a strong player first round, you have to take what they can get to win. So, I mean, ultimately, I don't think that for breaking ties, you should use anything other than actual wins, because quality of win is so arbitrary by who you drew the first round.
Well, it's your entire path
don't have control over that.
Yeah, you could have the two worst players in the world. They take on each other in the first round. One of those are going to win, so it's going to face a winner of the second round.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, not saying that anybody's bad, but I mean, you could just have
no players at the event are at exactly the same skill level, so there has to be a continuum. There's going to be a best player there, and there's going to be a worst player there. even if we're not good enough to identify who's the best and who's the worst, there's going to be a difference between.
And there's other things that you could use to rank people as well. And I know Rick has been kind of a fan of doing something like that, having ELO. like an ELO yeah. ranking.
I mean, ELO is how they do this for FIDE chess tournaments. I mean, I think a lot of this and a lot of the reason why people want to do this is sort of derived from the way FIDE does it. But FIDE has really good data and has ELO ratings that are actually meaningful. And we don't right now, and it's going to be really difficult to have really meaningful ELOs. So, I mean, I just think that at the situation we're at, with the type of data you have for events, that you shouldn't bother breaking ties. Because if you do it by strength of schedule, it encourages shitty behavior, like people being upset at other people for dropping. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't be annoyed, at least, if your first round drops, because it does tank your strength of schedule. I'm just saying that if you break ties based on strength of schedule, you are encouraging people being annoyed at people that just decide to leave because they no longer have a shot at the tournament. And at the same time, if your next one is control points or battle points or whatever, you're adding another layer of randomness in there, because it especially mm-hmm. matters who you get in the first and second rounds. And furthermore, you are encouraging people to then, in those rounds, especially if they find a weaker player, to just toy with them to rack up numbers.
And that's also
in my view is shitty behavior that's encouraged. Correct. Because correct. If you're in a situation where you're playing somebody that is weaker, you shouldn't come in there and say, "Oh, this is great. I can just toy with them all game and pump up my stats and fuck them having a terrible game."
I mean, you're basically adjusting your soft scores at that point.
Yeah.
And that's kind of one of the things that we really disliked about when we're in the Warhammer Fantasy world was soft scores. You know, we would try to judge everything directly by win-loss at that point. But then you had soft score points for painted armies, for sportsmanship score, score.
I am ecstatic that there aren't soft scores in War Machine, and I think it should stay that
kind
way.
Of there is. I mean, with control points.
Those aren't judged like sportsmanship or painting.
Correct.
But I'm just saying. I mean, I agree 100% there that the only thing you should really be looking at for how someone places in the event is win-loss record.
Yeah,
and that means that you. you basically, you have a number of people that have zero losses and you have a number of people that have one losses. And I don't think it's I don't think it's worthwhile to break it beyond that. You have a gold, tier and you have a silver tier and that's it.
Yep. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, the other thing with like control points and other things like that is also determinant on the makeup of the army. The person might actually just have a flat out assassination style army. It's not built to make that control points. He's built to, he's a Jake army who's built to go 20 minutes into the turn. And if he fails, then he's dead or his opponent's dead.
Yeah.
And then, it's hard to cater to those because you can't do anything like, if your opponent drops out of giving like an auto win to that thing, because then you can abuse it that way too.
Especially when you say okay, control points are one of the things you're going to be breaking ties on. I don't think you should at the tournament administration level favor one win condition over another.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah.
So that's the thing.
There's never going to be a perfect tiebreak. So your main point of not bothering with the concept of breaking ties is an interesting one.
Yeah. I mean,
but it's dumb and wrong.
I'm actually okay with that. The only issue with it is, as a tournament organizer,
the difficulty is going to be allocating prizes.
Allocating prizes is the biggest part because, if you're getting a steamroller kit, you're only getting 1 through 3 and two random other ones.
Well, for sportsmanship in general. The standard was changed, you would have to, know how many people are going to attend your event and have the correct number of coins or whatever. Yeah. The issue is knowing how many X and ones you're going to have. Yeah. And that would vary from event to event.
I mean, that would be great to do, I think, in stores that where you can't run a 4-round event in. So if you can only fit in like 3 rounds or something like that, because then you could run a 16-man event or higher event than chop it off there and have a gold and silver tier.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you just do it by gold and silver tier, that a 3-round 16-man event is more interesting because you don't have to worry about that. That you're going to have two people undefeated at the end, and that's okay. And this isn't a problem. But I mean, when you're focused on having a 1, 2, and 3 places, then some of these things become problems that really shouldn't be.
Yeah.
So that was just my opinion on it. That the problem with tie breaks you can step back beyond the fact that all of our tie breaks are imperfect and just say, well, do you really need them in the first place? And I don't think you do.
Would you do this then for tie breaks? Is you would have a gold and silver tier,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe have. I don't know, a bronze tier maybe handling the lowest of the tournament.
So the one person who went O and X,
or maybe the two people that went O and X.
Sure, for the day. Because there's going to be the same number of O and X's as there are X.
I mean, traditionally you just give them new dice.
that could be the prize. Yeah. But I mean, I don't like it, but I really like it at the same time. It's kind of in between. I don't like pointing out to somebody that they lost all day, but I like sharing the wealth in a sense for the event.
I mean, at that point, you're going to have a bell curve where you're going to have prizes for everybody there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're going to have your in a 3-round event, you'll have your 3-0s, your 2-1s, your 1-2s, and your 0-3s, and at that point, you might as well just give everybody something.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I will say I won the bottom of the tournament event once, prize once, and that was because it was a Who's the Boss event, and I went in not understanding what Who's the Boss.
You played
was.
Wrong.
I played wrong. I went undefeated and got the and won the prize for the lowest place.
Lowest amount of boss points for the day.
Yeah, because I did not understand what Who's the Boss. I did not read anything about it. I just brought in my dual Storm Lances army and crushed everybody and then lost the tournament because I wasn't aware of how it was supposed to go. It was great.
You labeled it wrong.
You
there
had
too.
A sheet.
You labeled it wrong there too because you called it a tournament. Because it's definitely not a tournament.
An event.
Yeah.
It was still fun though.
Yeah. And that's my mindset, and that's kind of what I see for like Blood Bowl events is a lot of spreading the wealth in the terms of, you know, you have the top people that won their things, and then you celebrate to give something to the folks that, you know, that finish out all their games, that played all their games, and came out and had a good time. But, you know, they didn't, you know, bad luck was on their side. You know, give them something for their
Or they're just shitty. You don't want to say that, though.
No, you don't.
That's why you just give them new dies.
Yeah. But that won't help the fact that they're shitty.
Why are you looking at me? I'm not that bad.
At War Machine or as a person?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, I think I agree with your thing. It would be neat to try out, but it would be kind of...
There are logistic challenges with putting the prizes together. But, I mean, at least the way we run events around here, we tend to have a bunch of smaller smaller prizes and then just raffle off the extra ones. And,
yeah.
I mean, I think that works in this situation, too. It's just getting the actual gold and silver coins would be tricky.
Yeah. We can do some contacting about something like that. But
yeah.
But, I mean, that's a weird thing, though, too. So let's say you have a 15-man event and it actually ends in three rounds. I mean...
Yeah, 15-man event, 3 rounds. You get two gold. I mean, you get 2 golds and 5 silvers. I think.
Oh, couldn't it actually end in 3 rounds though, too, with the paragons? Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah. It's possible. Yeah, it's possible. But I mean, you should. I mean, in most realistic events, I mean, I'm assuming you're not going to run 17 people in a 3 round event, because 17 is the first amount for 3 rounds that you can have 3 golds in that situation.
Yeah.
So I mean, as long as you are capping it at two to the n plus one players, you get a maximum of 2 golds.
Somebody put formulas into this discussion. Now I'm confused.
It's math.
Don't like it.
Math.
No, sir, I don't like it.
Math.
So chat was curious if we thought that ambush cards should automatically flip when you pass, just to prevent things like Morin not triggering.
This chat that you're seeing is for your. Non-existent Gwent podcast.
Well, since we don't have one of those yet, they wanted me to answer it in the normal podcast.
So this is why I like Jaws of the Wolf, because one of the theme benefits is that the other player can't ambush, and it solves that problem.
Yeah. Well, there's Roach Merciless, who actually might be better than expected in Arena, but definitely not constructed. Fuck when constructed. But you see a decent amount of ambush cards in Arena.
When can we... So you are going to be the producer of the Gwent podcast. When are you going to get this
rolling? If I'm in charge, never.
No, well, I mean, because I can't be in charge for it.
We put Nathan in charge of it and problem solved.
Yeah. Wow.
I tried talking to Jim about it, and Jim's like, no, I don't talk or play Gwent.
He was being sarcastic.
Yeah.
I got home last night, and he was like, on it already. I think it was still at Jordan's, but somehow was also
logged into Gwent. Yeah, through his mind powers.
He has like 800 hours of Gwent play on that account. It's absurd. Maybe I'll swing by Keith's on Thursday and record something.
Well, you should record it here because I got all the setup here.
That's true. Well, they have their stuff there too because he records the meta.
Wow.
I mean, that's a good counterpoint.
Yeah.
It's hard to get... Hey, listen, if you want things to happen, it has to be the least resistance possible from people like Jim and Keith.
Correct.
And doing it at their place is how you make it happen.
Correct. And then that makes sense. I mean, I'd like to at least have it on Crippled System.
Well, yeah. Because it's mainly... We'd have to have some similarly self-deprecating themed name, but Gwent-themed. So, you know, Blue Coin Bonanza or something like that.
What is a blue coin?
The coin flip to go first. Oh. The person who goes first is the one with the blue coin, and going first blows all of the ass.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So okay.
Getting the blue coin's bad.
I played Gwent like 6 times, so I don't remember these things.
I've played it 6 times.
I went through the tutorial live on the podcast.
You did.
I did, and I think I still lost.
Yeah, that's all right. That's okay.
I have a hard time... trying to figure out when to stop playing cards, and then I'm not set up at all for the rounds 2 and 3.
So think like so you want to win round 1 and then pass round 2 and then win round 3 is the easiest method to do it. But basically think about like when Steamroller had it, so that imagine the person who wins the deployment roll chooses table edge and goes first and gets to score first. That's what the coin flips like in Gwent. It's one of the few things I think is, you know. But it's not to that egregious extent. I think there's like a 54% advantage for the red coin. So it's not like game-breakingly bad. You know, you're dumb and nerdy. Chess, do you know what the current split is on white advantage? Have they mathed that out yet?
I don't remember what it is on the top of my head. It is absolutely huge. I mean, it's to the point that at master level chess, the black player does not try to win. The black player tries for a draw.
Right.
And a draw is considered to be an advantage to the black player because, I mean, effectively.
Is he reacting to everything?
Well, I mean, at the master's level, you don't play one game. You play a series of games. Sure. You alternate white and black. And so, I mean, at the master's level, the standard strategy is when you're black to try to draw and then try to win as white.
Mm. Google is telling me that the white advantage is between 52 and 56%.
Is that at master level or?
This just says since 1851 compiled statistics support this view. White consistently wins slightly more often than black, usually scoring between 52 and 56%. I don't know at what level. I'm just on the first move advantage in chess wiki page, which it's a big enough deal to have its own wiki page.
Yeah. I mean that certainly sounds about right for overall because honestly I prefer black and tend to win more as black because I play better reactively. But at the highest echelons of the game, because I am an intermediate chess player, the highest echelons of the game, that the advantage is generally considered for white to be so strong that black usually doesn't actively try to win the game as much as draw it.
We can get Jordan on the podcast. He could talk about chess.
Could he?
Not our Jordan, Chicago Jordan.
Oh, sure.
Jordan Ack. I think that's actually what he's doing now. Instead of playing War Machine or Guild Ball, he's playing chess.
I could talk about Chinese chess.
No.
It's really fun.
Or the Star Trek 3D chess.
No, less that.
I will say one of my favorite anecdotes in chess was that I was playing an associate of mine who happened to be internationally known in his field and well-respected and said he was a good chess player. And so we were playing a game, and he went first, and he started with an open game, the pawn to king 4, and I responded with a Sicilian, and he said, "Oh, that's an unusual move." And I was just taken aback because this person was, I mean, very smart and extremely respected in his field. And after describing himself as a good chess player, he immediately demonstrated that he had no idea how chess was played because the Sicilian is literally the most common response to E4.
I don't know what it is.
Never go up against a Sicilian when death is on the line.
Yeah, basically, it's at higher levels of play. It's the standard black response to white almost always starts with E4, moving the pawn in front of the king.
That's for the king. Two spaces.
One in front of the king.
And when you are starting chess, they teach you to respond exactly with the pawn in front of the king. So you match it up, and you have what's called an open game. Because that's the easiest to play as black. But the Sicilian, which is, I haven't played chess in so long, it's in front of the bishop pawn.
It's basically the one where the
knight pawn. And you move that up two spaces. And that is the most common response to E4 at the highest levels of chess because it has the best win and the best draw.
So moving up your knight pawn frees your bishop. Right?
It's a little more complex.
But that's one of the aspects it does. But yeah. The point is,
it's Gwent. Moving that pawn so it can possibly take that white pawn,
it's
or
bishop it's, on the other side,
or it's just moving directly in front of it, so it's cock blocking it.
No, it looks. If you are not familiar with the opening theory, it looks weird because it doesn't look like it does anything immediately.
Okay.
But it screws up white's opening in the next two or three turns.
Okay. And well, I know the one thing though is to move the. I'm very intermediate. I haven't touched this in like so long ago. Is to move the pawn in front of the king up, and then you cross with the queen and the bishop, and so you could possibly take the one piece that's in front of the opponent's king if they don't react at all to it get an easy quick checkmate.
But yeah, generally, I mean, if you're playing black, even if you're at the intermediate level, you should learn the Sicilian and play the Sicilian because it works better.
Speaking of the Sicilian, so I'm scrolling through that white advantage here, and they're talking about one of the modern views is so if the advantage that black has is that it can play defense against white's tempo, then white should play defense because they can do the same thing black does, but a turn sooner.
Yeah.
So they're saying that white can just start with the Sicilian on a naked board.
I don't know. Nobody does that.
That's it. Black, okay. The point is black setup in the Sicilian is fine as a reactive system, but not worth much when trying to claim the initiative as white. This is true. Yeah, so this person's agreeing with you. Yeah. But I just like the... if defense is considered good for black, it must be even better for white with a move in hand. Mikhail Botvinnik reportedly expressed the view.
Yeah. No, but for a long time, my favorite opening, because I prefer playing back, but for a long time, my favorite opening was the dragon variant of the Sicilian, because it was called the Sicilian dragon. And I mean,
that just sounds cool.
Yeah, that just sounds cool.
It does sound
cool. But I switched to the Nadorf, because I prefer that. Although you can also say the Nadorf is a variant of the dragon.
Well, maybe Nadorf is the name of a Sicilian dragon.
I'll go with that.
Yeah. There we go. True story.
I don't want to play chess because I haven't in years.
You play Chinese chess. I got it on my phone. Chinese chess is so good.
Mm-mm.
It is, too. Fuck you.
Mm-mm.
Shinky, mm-mm. I think I have it on here.
Nope, we don't need to play it now.
Yeah.
We need to end this soon so we can talk to WrestleMania.
But it's only 45 minutes. Are we just doing an hour episode?
Yeah, it's only going to be fine. Like an hour.
Do we have any Zappy Grumbles? Probably not. So no, it's recommendations time. And
we can.
That's the sound. That's
I
the
recommend you mute your phone. You mute your phone.
You don't like my Chinese chess theme music?
No.
It's dramatic. I was going into James Bond.
It's music clip art.
I recommend that you buy Thor Ragnarok onto DVDs or to Blu-rays.
Normally, he has a DVD player nowadays.
Well, the issue is, the reason to do so is because commentary tracks are a beloved thing to me. I find them very interesting, and I hate when films do not have them available. And I know more and more in the digital realm you don't bother buying a DVD, but the Thor Ragnarok DVD has a director's commentary by Taika Waititi, and it is the greatest thing ever. You need to, even if you don't buy it, just my recommendation officially is just to listen to the director's commentary for Thor Ragnarok, because Taika Waititi is hilarious. And he, in addition to being the director, he's also the one who voiced Korg, who everybody loved. Mm-hmm. Korg. And of course, he talks about how Korg's the greatest character. He talks about how he actually did the motion capture for Thor, and Chris Hemsworth actually wasn't even on set. His 2-year-old kid comes in and watches the movie with him for a while. It's great stuff.
Okay. All right. That's adorable. Talking about like favorite, we've mentioned this a ton of times on the podcast. Makes a good excuse to get physical medium is like Galaxy Quest's separate audio program. For that.
There was a long pause in there, and so it sounded like you were just going to say it's a good excuse to get physical.
Physical. Yeah, no physical medium. Physical. No, is have you heard the separate audio for Galaxy Quest?
No.
So
they have the voice tracks. They have like English and Spanish and French.
So there is a voice track that is all Thermian. The whole movie is all done in Thermian, and it's not like they just like cut the same voice track and then just
they dubbed the whole film.
They had people in the studio doing Thermian the entire time, except for they did mention like there was like Coke. Coke.
Yep. Brand name. It's just like when you're watching Telemundo.
Yep.
And it's like, I don't know any of the words you said, and then you said Pepsi. I got it.
Whole movie, all with different actors, too, with different inflections. Yeah. It is amazing to watch in there.
Was it Mame that said that said Galaxy Quest was one of the two perfect films?
It was, David Mame. Yeah. I think it was three, because I can never remember the third. But
what was
the
other one?
Fucking Rosebud, whatever.
Citizen Kane.
Yeah, Citizen Kane, Galaxy Quest, and some third one I can't remember. I'll have to track down. I used to own that book. I'll just go to a library and flip through and try to find it.
Citizen Kane is really weird to watch, because if you are not familiar with the history of cinema, you can say, you can read it, you can watch it and say, this is the most trite film
there
that has ever been made.
There isn't a single original idea in the film.
Yes, yeah. Because it originated all of the ideas.
Yeah, this is nothing. It's like somebody just did nothing but cliches. An hour and a half of cliches.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's people who believe that, though. That's a sad part.
The other, I love... Reno 911 Miami.
Sure.
So, first of all, Reno 911 is so fucking hilarious, and the film was so goddamn amazing. But the DVD for Reno 911 Miami has four commentary tracks, because one of them is half the cast, and the other one is the other half of the cast. And then those same two groups of people recorded a second commentary track in character. So you get the fucking Reno 911 character just completely talk about this documentary about their life as police officers, and it's brilliant.
It's about the same as Spinal Tap, as the guys from Spinal Tap recorded their commentary in character.
Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog has the commentary track that is itself its own musical about making the show. It's called Commentary the Musical. And they just sing about, hey, folks, we should do a commentary track about our show. And they sing about how they're going to sit down and record it. And
man, I haven't seen
Nathan Fillion talks about how he phoned in his performance and wasn't very good. And
I haven't watched that in a long time. Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen that.
It's like a half hour. You can always just rewatch it. Yeah.
My recommendation is going to be a show that I started watching all because of a single clip I found on Facebook. It is called Toast of London. Starts Matt Brady, I believe.
Yeah.
Is
that his name? Fuck. He's amazing.
He was in.
He's the second boss in IT Crowd.
Correct.
And he's the best buddy of the main character in Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. And he's a bunch of. If you never watched Dark Place,
Dark Place. But the show is a little off the wall, but it's basically about a classically trained actor and his life, pretty much, of dealing with other things. It is amazing. Yeah, I've only watched two episodes so far. It's only three seasons long. It's British seasons, so they're only like eight episodes apiece. It is hilariously amazing. I think it's either Brady or Bradley. I know it's Matt.
Well, when I Google Toast of the Town, it gives me the Ed Matt Sullivan
Berry.
Show.
It's Matt Berry.
Why is it giving me the Ed Sullivan Show, goddammit?
It was Toast of London, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's part of the reason. Even still, why is it giving me...
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I loved his delivery of all of his lines, of stuff that his character in the IT Crowd... He was probably one of the highlights. Both the bosses of the IT Crowd were great.
I wonder if this gun's loaded. He just sticks in his mouth and just pulls the trigger like seven times. Nope. And just throws it back in his drawer. Yeah.
Yeah, Matt Berry.
Yeah, Matt Berry is he's good. He's one of those, like, if you see him in anything, he's great. Like, he's one of those reliably fucking hilarious people, but he hasn't really crossed the pond. Like, no. As Americans, we finally caught on to like Richard Ayoade and some of the other ones like that. But Matt Berry is still a hidden treasure.
Yeah, he's a British treasure that he needs to be celebrated in the U.S. a lot more.
And
it
Eddie
is.
Izzard, who is now on the National Committee for the Labour Party in Britain.
Yeah. Eddie Izzard, fucking, are either of you familiar with what he did with marathons? Like, he's a big marathon runner.
No.
He's just a big marathon runner, sure. And he ran... something like he did a marathon a day for like a month. Wow. And he was just going to keep doing it. And then his doctors like physically forced him to stop.
So quickly to go over Toast of London, it is available directly on Netflix, all three seasons. It's no longer being made as far as I know. I think it stopped in 2015, 2016. Mm-hmm. But show is great and you guys should watch it.
27 days of a marathon per day.
Jesus Christ. He doesn't really seem like he's the most in shape either.
Well, you know, you see him in dresses.
Yeah.
Well, you probably have a mental image of him 15 years ago, the last time he did like a stand-up special that made it over to America, like on HBO.
Yeah.
Like Dressed to Kill and whatnot, those things are decades old.
Yeah.
They're hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now, as I said, he's on the National Council for the Labour Party of United Kingdom.
Yeah, and he did 43 marathons in 51 days.
Jesus Christ. All right.
I guess the guy likes running.
Yeah.
I will recommend not doing that.
I mean, you know, run is fine. I mean, when I ran cross-country and track back in the day, I had a sub-5-minute mile.
In a Rocky-esque moment, he climbed the steps in front of the National Gallery, lifted his hands in the air, and said, "I feel exhausted." Drenched in rain and sweat, Izzard was cheered to the finish by hundreds of supporters. He said, "I feel dead." Like the very triumphant responses.
I also recommend watching NXT TakeOver that happened yesterday, April 6th. It is amazing. Get your WWE subscription. It's worth all $10. April 7th is when it happened. It's worth all $10 that you got it. It is an amazing event. The first match alone, which I'm going to make Nathan watch after this, is... It's up there with the Hardy Boys...
Solving Mysteries?
Nope. The Hardy Boys return at WrestleMania last year.
To solve a mystery?
No.
They should have the Hardy Boys wrestle Nancy Drew just to really figure out... And then, like, halfway through the match, when one of them's about to pin the other, Encyclopedia Brown will come out and hit him with a chair.
What's your recommendation, David?
I recommend not running marathons for 27 consecutive days.
Okay.
Come on. We have a short podcast. I didn't have enough time to come up with one.
Okay. That's fine.
I just stalled like a motherfucker.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to let Nathan stall, and then I realized that I'm not going to go down that road.
I was a big Encyclopedia Brown guy
as
a kid. I never read Hardy Boys or Nancy Drew. I was the...
I didn't read it. I didn't read as a kid. I don't know how to read.
That's fair.
Actually, I did read a lot when I was a kid. I think like in first or second grade, I ended up reading Tom Sawyer.
Okay.
I knew I was more advanced for that point.
So you had the Pizza Hut book it thing when I was a kid.
Sure. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. After a point, they stopped believing me.
I when they would come around like once a quarter or whatever at school, and you'd have like the Scholastic Bowl like order sheet to get all the books, and I would just bankrupt my parents because I would want every single one of them.
Yeah.
I my parents didn't let me. Once I started getting the Garfield books, they just said no after a while. Because I wanted all like 20 of Garfield books at that time. Now it's just too crazy.
You know what's the dad and the owner in Garfield?
John Arbuckle.
My brain kept going to Jim Davis, but that's John is an Odie's owner.
No.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Early on in the comic, John had a roommate. Who had like some weird fucking name that like doesn't exist anymore.
I remember that.
And that guy just disappeared strips. And Jim Davis said that you didn't have an official explanation for where he went, but you should not check John Arbuckle's basement.
I was just watching part of Garfield the movie, and it bothers me that Odie doesn't look like a spastic looking dog. I know that Odie is actually modeled after, you know, some type of dog, but you have a cartoon Garfield. Give me a cartoon Odie as well in that goddamn series.
Because
Odie is he looks awesome. He's the best.
But he's great.
Nothing beats just the face and a tongue.
Lyman, by the way, Lyman was his
I do remember
name.
That.
But it's a shitty. It's like a formulaic mechanical comic strip now. Like, Garfield is like, you know, this just machine now that just whatever.
You say it was ever anything but. I mean,
it originally had some cleverness.
Davis, I mean, designed Garfield to be iconic.
Correct.
And that it was supposed to be a machine.
But he put enough effort to get the machine started. Like, he had to make it good enough to get the momentum to coast. <Yeah. laughs> But a couple of years ago, I saw one on a Sunday Funny for, like, Christmas, and I laughed my balls off for, like, 15 minutes. So it still, every once in a while, is good.
It's no Family Circus.
Oh, there's, like...
Which I love all the pop culture references to the Family Circus now, which is about how horrible it is. I can't remember what movie it was that they was talking about how he was opening up the funny papers and he was...
It's Go. It's from Go.
It's from Go.
He's always waiting there.
I knew
it's in the corner just waiting to suck.
Yep. I knew it was a Timothy Oliphant saying that he had. But the Family Circus. Horrible. Have you seen Go?
What is it, Go?
Go? Oh, man.
It's a 90s movie. It's like if American teenagers did a...
Pulp Fiction movie.
I wasn't going to say Pulp Fiction. I was going to say fucking the guy who does Lock, Stock. Why is my brain not...
Oh, like I know what you're talking about.
Jesus. Yeah. I'm just so frazzled right now. I can't remember. But yes, that guy. Madonna's husband. you know, with the snatch. Guy Ritchie. If an American 20-something did a Guy Ritchie film instead of a British 40-something, that's what Go is.
Okay. Yeah.
It is millennial American Guy Ritchie.
It has a lot of good actors in it. It has a lot of amazing sequences in it. It fits up there with... That was during my time when I was telling everybody that any action sequence that you do, any action sequence for any movie, if you put it to the sounds of Magic Carpet Ride by Steppenwolf, it's amazing. And I kid you not, and it was the thing I was telling everybody around. I think that summer, or close to around that time, was when First Contact came out and Go came out. And both of these movies have, in their action sequences, Magic Carpet Ride going. First Contact, they rode into space with Magic Carpet Ride.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you should.
Yep. We should make you watch Go sometime, because that's a great film.
Fuck Pinterest. It's like, I just want to download this picture, but it's all just behind layers of telling me to download a Pinterest app and stupid shit like that.
I loathe Pinterest because of that. And I especially hate it because half of the time when I'm looking up color schemes for miniatures and stuff like that, I get caught.
That's for like 3 years ago.
A Pinterest hole.
I'm showing Andy the Garfield comic that that's a funny comic strip. That is a legit punchline.
Let me see.
That is really good.
Like, I know Garfield is stereotypically just like a garbage strip, but that one is funny.
I mean, it involves Odie. Yeah. So it's Odie being Odie. So,
well, and it's just visual, you know, no dialogue or nothing. Just and you set up, you have your repetition, right? You got John prepared to wrap a present. He's got the gift and all the wrapping paper and tape. And then, boom, next panel, finished present. Garfield, prepared to wrap a present. Boom, next panel, finished present. Odie, and look at all serious. Look at, he's got the squinty eyes. Like, he means business.
Correct.
He's going to wrap that present. And the next panel, just fucking disaster. Tape everywhere. Present stuck to his head. Good times. Good time.
Is his tongue wrapped at least? I think it...
There is ribbon and tape attached to his tongue. Yeah, like the wrapping paper is hanging off of his tongue. The ribbon's wrapped on his ears. The tape dispenser is in one of his ears. That's just a funny image. Good job, whoever ghost wrote that for Jim Davis.
Aww. All right, so we're going to call it quits. Thank you all for our Patreon sponsors.
Yeah, those sponsors Andy says we don't
sponsors.
Have.
They are our sponsors. But
they're angels.
They are awesome. But we'll be back next weekish with another podcast.
All right.
And also to let you guys know, if you're listening to this, when I announced that our podcast was ending on April 1st, you should have checked the date, because there was I got a lot of messages with people telling me that they're so sorry about us going away. I don't know if they were actually trolling us, though. It's possible that they may have just been trolling us.
Right.
And there was some people that I couldn't tell if they were trolling or truly saying finally or about time.
A little of both.
Yeah, a little A, a little column A, column B.
See, all we got to do is get Chain Attack to shut down, and eventually we can be the longest running podcast.
I don't think Chain Attack's shutting down
at all. We can make it happen.
How do you measure longest running?
Jay Larson's doing the meta now, right? So we just have to drive a splinter between him and Trevor. And
I mean, we could run like... I mean, we could also start recording like 5 or 6 10-minute podcasts a day.
I know.
And start cranking our number up.
It's like that... Well,
or we can just arbitrarily...
No, they're in season 2, so technically we're the longest running season 1 podcast. Actually, I think Chain Attack season 1 still has its beat still by like 100.
Well, we still have to eventually pass Muse, although they fucking cheated.
Yeah, they did cheat. I mean, we were going for about 6 months, I think. I mean, they were going for about 6 months before we started.
Yep.
But we could try to drive a thing into Trevor's like little list that he's building now too with movies, because he just had a voting for that was the worst ever. Yeah. It was the Rundown versus somebody.
I think, was it Transporter?
Yes, it was the Rundown versus Transporter, and Transporter won.
Yeah.
And that is...
Rundown is so good.
That is the wrong.
Yes.
The complete and utter wrong.
Well, I rest right now. Quigley Down Under is losing to Demolition Man. And
that's about right.
Demolition Man is fine. Quigley Down Under is underappreciated.
It is underappreciated.
Quigley Down Underappreciated.
The one though. But that was going against like Condor Man or some shit. Like
fuck
that.
You, Condor Man's great. Also, no, I don't think it was going against Condor Man. It was going against something else. Yeah. But
the one one, which is interesting because the reason why did you know this? That the have you seen the one? Jet Li?
I think about 20 years ago.
Jet Li, the one where basically it's a multi-dimensional thing, and yeah. As they kill, then there's only down, you know, everyone starts
all
getting the power.
All Andes across all dimensions share power, so the fewer Andes there are, the stronger each Andy becomes.
Correct. Yeah. And that's Jet Li, the one.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there's just Jet Li's trying to kill off other Jet Li's.
Yeah.
It has a weird end to the film, too.
It has the most horrific nightmare hell possible. And I've ranted about the ending of The One several times, so I will not do it this episode. But that is one of the most, like, Twilight Zone horrific twists. Like, the guy's glasses break and there's finally time. The ending of The One is beyond any Twilight Zone twist ever. And people don't see it. Only I see it because I'm insane.
But, no, The Rock was supposed to originally be The One.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can imagine that movie with The Rock in it.
I cannot.
I cannot either.
Oh, man.
Instead, he was making a movie called El Dorado.
Would his eyebrow just keep getting higher and higher?
Yeah, the more that he kills. Yeah. So eventually it's like this three-story fixture hanging off. It's like a cartoon.
The second the last one drops a building on him and he knocks it off with his eyebrow.
Was is it The Big Hit? Is that the Mark Wahlberg one?
Yes. I love The Big Hit.
With what's his face?
Oh, is that in Trevor Singh? It should be in Trevor Singh.
Check if that's in that, because that's one of those style. Big Hit's good stuff. Because it
does not take itself seriously, and it's amazing.
Not John Turturro. What is the name of the other guy that's in it? Fuck. He's a...
Lou Diamond Phillips.
No. The one who dies like five times in The Big Hit. Isn't it? What's his face? The one from who played Violator and is in...
John Leguizamo?
Leguizamo? Is it Leguizamo? No, it's not Leguizamo. No, then. Not who is that. It?
It's Lou Diamond Phillips is the villain.
Like the one that dies like five times? Not the yes. big villain, but just the...
There's not a guy that dies like five times in the film. There's a guy... I mean, there's a guy that leaves... He's Antonio, not Rodriguez, it's Antonio something, Sabata Jr., who's a big heartthrob during the time when that movie was made. And so he plays a very small part in it. And the reason why he's not in the film is because he's on vacation throughout the weekend. Because the whole movie takes place over a weekend. It's about a group of hitmen that just one is on vacation.
Yeah, but I feel like, because it's been forever since I've seen it, but I feel like, it's like an Iron Bar from Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome situation where that character like explodes, but he survives it, and then he gets shot, but he survives it, and then he falls off a cliff, but he survives it, and like he just keeps coming back.
That's basically Lou Diamond Phillips.
Okay, it was.
But they keep on cutting to scenes where you know, like the car falls off the cliff and lands on him on the car. Yeah, that's Lou Diamond Phillips.
Okay, I thought it was the Antonio Sabato Jr. was the one.
Nothing happened with him because either way, he was on vacation.
I was just mixing up who it was, but I love that gimmick with him in that movie and Iron Bar in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. Like that when you take a live action film and you have the Roadrunner Wile E. Coyote thing where one of the characters just quote unquote dies like 10 fucking times and just won't. That's funny to me.
That
especially
movie
if they just get like a bandage after each one. So like by the end of the film, they just got like the
he gets a mild limp.
Yeah, fucking it. Yeah, that was just one death.
The whole Big Hit is, and the whole premise at the very end of the film is with them just trying to return a video cassette to a movie or a
channel. No, you're thinking of that South Park episode.
No.
Did we stall long enough, David?
I already recommended something. Do I have to recommend something else?
I forgot. Shit. No. I'm really drunk.
We're cutting this out. We're not drunk.
You don't know me.
Okay. You just came from work.
You don't know me.
Thanks for listening, guys. Yep. See you next week.